Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and with me is Dr. Richard Tooley, though he's not really with me, only through the beauty of technology. I'm interviewing him from Taiwan. He is in the evening, 12 hours apart, and I'm in the morning. So yeah, we got up pretty early this Sunday morning, and you're still at work pretty late this Sunday. So thank you for being with us. We are talking about overseas, the missionary mindset. We had gone through in a previous show about some of the classes. You have 17 periods that you teach in a week, much heavier than the normal college professor, and some of the challenges. I really wanted to talk about some of the techniques that you're doing, but before that, we do probably need to set the stage for someone who didn't get to hear the previous show. So just tell us a little bit about how you came to be at Taiwan Adventist College and what you're doing there.
Well, I came here, it was probably providential. We weren't planning on it, and the opportunity came up out of the blue, and we were in a position there in the United States that allowed us to be able to do this. So we worked rather diligently to get the proper clearances through the governments, and by the time I got here, I got in here on a Friday and started teaching on Monday.
Now, have you had any feedback from your colleagues or from the other professors at the university as to if your pedagogy is unique or appropriate or the person's shoes you filled? You know, how do you know that you're doing the right thing?
Well, that's a good question. I don't.
Ambiguity, huh?
Yeah, I am coming into a department that's relatively new here. Prior to the bilingual business department, there was an English department, which was rather large, but it went down to no students. And so then they started up the bilingual business program, which incorporates a full BS degree in business management with teaching English. So these students are making a quantum leap from coming in here with a minimal understanding of English and moving to the point where they're able to communicate and actually move on from here to the United States, where they, many of them, go for MBAs at colleges in the United States. So that's pretty dramatic.
Yes, and I can see where your understanding and your training in differentiated instruction has really paid off, because some of the techniques that you're using as far as putting them in groups and using technology and writing and acting, you know, it's all part of differentiated instruction. So who would have ever guessed that you would be using all those tools in a foreign country?
Yeah, now, I'm glad I have them.
So you're doing two classes where it's like an immersion into English.
Yes.
And then you're doing like a situational and a conversational. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about this communications class, because I think the things that you're doing can be applicable to any situation, how to be better communicators, how to be up in front. So tell me all the aspects that you do with this communications class.
Well, that one was kind of an interesting one when we came into it. When it first started, it's supposed to be what they called it, Introduction to Oral Communication. So I walk into the classroom because I've been told this is a classroom where they need to learn to do public speaking. So I walk into the classroom and I'm dealing with pretty much upper level class students. I have a mixture of some lower class and some upper class, but all of them are pretty good in their English. They're up there quite a ways. And so I came in there and I said, okay, so this is a class on public speaking. And they all go, public speaking? We've already had a lot of classes in public speaking. So being that I am the renegade that I am, I said, okay, we're going to now use the other part of the word of the class, and that is communications. So this will become a communications class, and we will incorporate public speaking in it, but it will be first and foremost a communications class. So I moved them. I had talked with a professor who had been teaching it before, and he had given me a couple of books, and one of them was Communication Light. It didn't have much substance in it, and I had taken that into the first class. And after that, I took in the heavier one that is literally a communications textbook, and we started off with that. And so I began to work through the communications theories with them. And what I do in that class is I split it. The first part of the class, I go over the chapter material with them, teach them different aspects of communication, verbal communication, nonverbal communication, technology and communication, all of those different things about communication that go on, different theories of communication. Of course, there's a bunch of them that are out there now, you know, self-perception, attributional theory, all of the different theories of communication, and how those things apply in their lives. And for them, this you get just about anywhere, because a lot of aha moments come on them, because they go, oh, we do that. Oh, man, I do that. You know, because you go through those theories and you put them into practical life applications so that you can see how they behave, or how it affects their behavior, how it affects the way they relate to the people around them, and their ability to understand the world. So we're going through all of the different theories of communication, and that's the first part of the class. I spend no more than 20 minutes of a class period in that. And in that discussion, I expect feedback from them, too, as we're going through it. So I'm not going to let them sit there and act like they understand every word I say. So they're going to have to give me feedback. And I use all kinds of technology in there as much as possible. I put videos in, I use PowerPoints, I use illustrations, I use whatever I can find on the internet to make it so that they can see this in action. And I want it to be really, really good. Or without any of those, then I simply create the illustration and I let them see how it practically applies to them. So that's the first 20 minutes. And for that, I get right in the middle of the classroom. It's pretty much a circle of tables. And I get right in the middle of that classroom and I interact with every one of the students that are there. And then, because, you know, lecture is boring. Just flat out boring. But with no cognitive background, with nothing there to connect to, sometimes you have to give lecture. You have to give them information so that it can, so that they have something to work
talk.
With. Yeah. So I give them a 15 to 20 minute teacher talk in there on the communication theory that's going on, and help them to understand it and how it works for them, and then get feedback from them on that. Then I switch the class to the speech part of the class. And in the speech part of the class, I set it up like a formal agenda. So there is an MC who is in charge, or a chairman who's in charge. Then there's someone who's going to give a vocabulary word for the day. And then there's going to be three speeches that are given that they have to prepare. And I have given them the topic, or I have given them the situation, and they can choose their own topic. So, for instance, they may have a speech that they're going to give as a persuasion speech, or a sales speech, or a speech to a hostile audience, or something like that. So it sets it up, and then they can choose the topic. Or I give them the topic, and I've given them some real zingers, you know, like, what is the meaning of life type questions? You know? I've given the moral dilemma questions that they have to struggle with. You know, at first it was pretty light. I would give them light stuff. And to start with, I said, okay, we're going to do these speeches 2 to 3 minutes, so you have a chance to, you know, work on 2 to 3 minutes. And then we're going to move the speeches to 3 to 5 minutes, and we're building it up. Now, with this course, I'm doing some things probably that other people would frown on for this particular course, because this is not an upper division course. I am not giving them a test. Instead, they will have to do an 8 to 10 minute speech with proper citations, and it will have to be in a proper 5-paragraph style. So they will have to start off their speech with an introduction and a thesis statement. They will have to give at least 3 points of support for that thesis statement, summarize it, discuss it, and conclude it. And then they will have to provide me with their bibliography for it. So I think that that's pretty important. The rest of it is an introduction to it, and I build all of this in through the speeches that I'm making them take. So when I give a lecture, usually then I try to tie the speeches that they have to give into the lecture material that I've given them. And that way, it's reinforcing what I've talked mm-hmm. about. I don't know. You know, I couldn't tell you whether it's working or not. I know that I know
they haven't fired you yet.
No, they love the class. The students get a lot out of the class. I do not have students coming late, and I do not have students skipping that class, because they really like the understanding mm-hmm. they're getting about who they are. And you know, I gave them a challenge. I said, I challenge any of you for a week to do without your cell phone. And none of them took me up on it. So that was part of my communications training to them, that they're stuck with technology now, mm-hmm. different than they were before. So it, you know, it, as an introduction to communications class, I am covering it. And I know how much they know. I don't have to test them to know what they don't know or know, you know, because
you know.
I'm getting that feedback from them as I go along. And that's the important part of it, is to be able to get the feedback.
Going back to your communication class, how did you become prepared? Reflecting back on your life, how was God preparing you for this specific class?
When I was in college, I took tons of communications courses. They fascinated me. And even though I didn't graduate with a communications degree, I have a lot of hours of upper division communications classes from one of the best teachers, Art Hauck, who is now, he's died a long time ago, but he was a tremendous teacher. And I really appreciate it. And he got me so interested in it that that could have become my major, because he was a fascinating teacher in communications. And then when I went on into graduate school, I took my MBA. It was in industrial relations, and there's a ton of courses there in organizational theory, organizational psychology, you know, a lot of it dealing with communication, because industrial relations is about people relating to people. And then in my PhD in leadership, my dissertation took me into a huge amount of study on how people relate to each other, community and culture, and how we just get along, and how we are communicating, how words must be something other than just words. They have to have meaning. So I do have quite a bit of courses in communication that I'm able to use, and I've been being refreshed in communications just listening. And I enjoy it, because the other part of it is I am dealing in a culture that is significantly different than North America. But they do think differently. Western thought and Eastern thought are substantially different. I mean, dramatically different. Okay, so if you write the date in North America, if you write the date, you're going to write the month, the day, and the year. If you go to England, you're going to write the day, the month, and the year. Here, you're going to write the year, the day, and the month.
Isn't that fascinating?
So it's backward. They write that. And then if you're going to write your name, the first name they want to hear is your last name, not your first name. Mm-hmm. For us, we want to say, oh, well, hi, I'm Richard Tooley. No, they want to know you are Tooley and Richard. Mm. So they do things differently here in their thought processes. We think in terms of linear. They think in terms of circular. Mm. We think in terms of categorization and organization that way. They think in terms of relation.
Mm.
So it's quite a bit different in how they communicate versus how we communicate. It's very, very interesting to work with them.
What has been the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge is always making sure that they understand what I'm saying. You know, mm-hmm. you can sit up there and you can think you've got all of their attention because they have rapt attention. They're just sitting there watching you. It's like, oh, yeah, oh, man, I am being brilliant today. I have them just on the edge of their seats. And then you say, do you understand? No. So the biggest challenge is just making sure that you never let them just sit there. You have mm-hmm. to continually get feedback from them to make sure that they're not just pulling the wool over your eyes, or the look that you're seeing isn't about how great you're speaking, but rather, what in the world is this guy saying?
Now, what has been the biggest reward?
The biggest reward, of course, is when you hear them come back with something that says, oh, I really love this class.
Mm-hmm.
And also when you're in a class, you know, being a teacher on any level can be a very lonely job in the midst of many.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a teacher, there is a natural barrier between you and your students that by necessity must be there. You can't be their best buddy because you're their teacher. They have to feel, and I suppose this theory some people might want to shoot at, but truth is, you can't be their best buddy and be their teacher at the same time.
I agree.
Yeah, you hold too much power.
Mm-hmm.
So what is good is that you are, when you realize that you have struck a comfortable relationship with your students, such that you know they're comfortable around you, you know that you can be comfortable around them, even though you recognize and they recognize that there is still a teacher-student relationship.
Yeah.
So you know that they feel comfortable enough to say what's on their mind, even if what is on their mind is not very complimentary to you, but they do it with respect because they want to know. And you can do likewise with them. So you come to a point where you have a normalized relationship that is a comfortable one. It's one in which learning can take place. That's a huge reward. The other thing we do here, too, is every Friday night now and once a month on Monday night, I have a group of students that come over to my house. They come over for worship because they hate the dorm worship. So they come over for worship, and it gives me a chance then to do things with them. I always like to put young people in with hard questions because I want them to think about what they're doing and why they're doing it. And it's rather interesting that our mix here in our program, we have 32 students that are in the bilingual business program. And of those 32 students, 10 of them are Christian. The rest of them are
wow.
Buddhists and Taoists.
Mm.
And that was one of the other interesting things here. You do not fight evolution versus creation. You don't fight atheism versus Christianity. Because you're dealing with people here who really have no cognitive orientation when it comes to Christianity, if they're Buddhist or if they're Taoist.
Mm-hmm.
And Buddhism and Taoism is huge here. We are in the middle of the 1040 window here. And
wow.
You know, less than 8% of the population in this window has any idea of Christianity, but they are very spiritual. So it is rather interesting to be able to have them come over to the house, have a worship, and you know, blatantly say it. This is worship. We're not going to fool around.
Mm-hmm.
You came to Seventh-day Adventist College, and you're going to get worship, whether you believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. You just have to be respectful, I guess.
Yeah, but then again, I want to gear the worship such that I'm not putting them in a position of trying to figure out what the world are you talking about? Abraham, who's he?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be able to get them to start thinking about the deeper things of life.
Yeah.
And we had a situation that was, I have no idea what happened here. And and I'm not taking any credit for it, and I'm not saying that anything I did anything, but we had one of those situations this last Friday night where we had a group of students come over, and actually it was Sabbath morning. So they came over because what we're trying to do is have an English-speaking church service here for them to be able to attend every Sabbath. So we need to build an English-speaking program that works every Sabbath. Well, I'm a glutton for punishment, of course, because guess who gets to be in the middle of developing that now? And it means that every Sabbath morning at 9 o'clock, I'm going to have a group of students who are hungry looking for breakfast. So this morning, this past Friday, Sabbath morning, first time it's been announced, 13 students show up for breakfast, you know.
Wow.
So I'm cooking like the banshee to try and get enough breakfast out for all of them to eat. But we sit down and we start having a conversation about Job. You know, we're talking about Job. Now, you can spend a bunch of time on Job, and you can talk about the meaning of life of Job. But I chose to ask a different question. I said, so what is time? You know, because Job's talking about the shortness of time. So I said, what is time? And after one student came up with the idea that time is a sixth dimension, an eighth dimension. Okay, so you're out there somewhere in the trying to be a pseudoscientist. That's okay. So, you know, why is time important? So finally, they did hit on it. They said, well, because we die. I said, yeah, from the day you're born, you're dying. And there's this one young man who's sitting there listening intently to all of this. And, you know, I begin to tie it all together. And I say, you know, really, as human beings, we are left with one question that we have to answer. And that's it. There's nothing else to it, but there's one question. And that question is, do you believe in Jesus and God? And if you do, that's going to shape the direction you go. If you don't, you know, then so be it. But the question is, are you going to believe Jesus and God? And he,
amen.
He sat there for a while and just sat there and thought about that. He says, that's it.
Amen.
I said, yeah, either you believe him or you don't. That's your question. That's the question you have to answer, that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then in church, so we're sitting in church service, and the pastor makes an altar call. So we're sitting there, and pretty soon I see this young man walking down the aisle. Now, his faith is,
amen.
He's not Christian. I mean, either Buddhist or Taoist, but he comes down, and he says he wants to be baptized. Well,
amen.
You know, I don't know that
that
had anything to do with it, but I can tell you what, a whole bunch of other people thought they had something to do with it. There's so much, so many different people that influence the life, but questions like that, you know, if you look at the idea of knowledge being constructed or our worldview is something that we construct, mm-hmm. every little piece that somebody puts in somewhere builds up the wall that people, or the truth that people have. And so who knows, you know, these kinds of questions are the kinds of questions that could spur him to be thinking, you know, this is it. Mm-hmm. This is the time for me to make that kind of decision. So it's kind of an interesting thing. It's a great story.
It is. What a wonderful way to conclude the show. And we just thank you for taking this time with us. We have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.